and I wanted them to have a good home and a good chance, and he refused to give them back. It was just before Christmas, and I said, have a heart. I've lost my home and my animals. Have a heart. He said, I'll sell them back to you for what I paid. I paid him $100 cash for the dogs. He said, don't bring a check. He made no mention of the money on his receipt, and he gave me back the two dogs that he, being a dog person, called Golden Retrievers. I explained to him they were yellow labs. I took my dogs in very poor condition, and I was able, fortunately, to find them each good homes, and the man paid me $100 apiece for them so he could have their papers and train them to be bird dogs and use them for something prosperous. But this bill should have passed last time. It was unfortunate. It got bottlenecked. And I really hope...
I would say that, in all due respect, the inspection pieces and the ability for people to go onto other people's property has been clarified and cleaned up a great deal. Section 7 looks a lot different than what it was last time. So you should credit Representative Mannix with that.
I credit anyone who's been able to help. I'm just a Eugene citizen who works for a living. I don't know anything about all these
processes.
Thanks
for coming tonight.
Thank you for having me.
Yvonne.
I'm Yvonne Simmons, Madam Chair and members of the Senate Judiciary Committee. To many of us, our pets are a major part of the warmth, love, and caring that we get, and it helps to keep us sane. I'm one of those people that my pets help keep me sane. And that certain people can put a price over my dog or cat's life in our community and that can prosper is very wrong. It incites crime. We had ads in the Oregonian a couple of years ago saying up to $50 for dogs, up to $20 for cats. Any unwanted, abused, or homeless animals, U-Haul or WeHaul. And that was by one of the animal dealers we have here in Lebanon. And I think that, because there's a lot of people that would do anything to get money. I was involved in... the return of one such dog that was gotten unlawfully, and it took a month to get the dog back. That time, there were four dogs that went missing, and three of them at the end got back, one didn't. Not long after this passed the judiciary subcommittee in the House, a lady phoned our group, and her dog, too, had been taken unlawfully. And fortunately, for all the work that we've been doing in our own time, we managed to track down where her dog went, and it was to a buncher who is known to sell to this one animal dealer, one that a lot of people know about here in Lebanon. And she did get her dog back. She was lucky. I'm just outraged that this continues to happen and that it's at people's expense, because it's not just an animal issue, it's a people issue. And people get very upset because animals become part of their family, part of their lives, and they're like children to some people. And I think that I urge you to pass House Bill 2660 and make it law so
Thank
that
you.
It doesn't happen. Thank you.
Renee DeLapp, is it DeLapp?
Yes.
And Rebecca Anderson. You want to bring Susan Metley with you, too. Rebecca, thank you. Go ahead, please. We have a long agenda tonight, so I'd ask you to be as brief as possible and we'll do your comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the Judiciary Committee. My name is Renee DeLapp, and I'm fortunately not in the same shoes as people who have come before you. I've not had this happen to me. However, I am very aware of the problem and would urge your consideration of this bill, because I think that it is entirely appropriate to legislate and regulate this industry. Like it or don't, regardless of one's position regarding animal research itself, it is appropriate to regulate the way in which the animals are put into the marketplace. And Oregon does have this industry, and as a citizen, I really would urge that you provide a sane and safe and legal way by which these animals are handled. I would also really like to mention the level of crime with which theft is treated. It is a fairly high standard, but I think it's appropriate, because it seems to me that if one is going to ever deter behavior, you can do it by either making the consequence of apprehension serious or the certainty of apprehension pretty high. This is one of those crimes that it is really not easy to apprehend someone. It's really, these are the anomalies that we know one another or that this has ever come to light. There are lots more people out there that this has happened to. Lastly, I would really just like to ask that you take into account the fact that while there may not be thousands and thousands of people here saying, please enact this legislation, that's in part because lots of people don't know this happens. And every person with whom I've spoken and told, did you know that this happens and the level on which it happens, is appalled and frightened and shocked. And I think that that's a common reaction regardless of whether one is really an animal fiend or, you know, really just regards them as creatures. They still are appalled that this is the way in which animals are handled. So on behalf of people who do know about the problem and those who haven't yet learned, I would really urge that you use the knowledge that you have to protect them.
Thank you very much. Rebecca?
Good evening, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Rebecca Owen Anderson. I'm here on behalf of the Humane Society of the Willamette Valley. With me is Susan Mentley, who is the Animal Care Coordinator for the Humane Society of the Willamette Valley. We are in support of the amended form of House Bill 2660. Thank you so much for taking time in your busy schedule to hear it.
Thank you. We do have the written testimony.
Yes,
your written
this is a good bill. And if you have any questions, we'd be glad to answer how serious we think this problem is. Thank you.
Okay. Are there any questions from committee members? Thank you. This bill is in lots better shape than it was when we had it last time. And
better bill.
Thank you very much. Anyone else? Quickly.
I know you guys are tired, so I'll be real brief. I'm a victim of pet theft. My name is Johnny Hudgens.
Mostly it's a question of we have a committee. Once you get a sense of there's not too much opposition, it's do you want the bill or do you want to talk?
Good. Well, this bill, so let's go, okay? I have a two-year-old. My cats were stolen out of my front yard. The lowlife around the corner said to his nephews, go get me some cats and dogs and I'll give you money. And they did. We talked to the sheriff. We talked to everybody. We got one back. She's now going to die from feline leukemia. The other one, we were told, escaped from the facility. When I spoke to the sheriff himself, he said out of 300 complaints, three cats were returned in all of Albany, all of that area. So I think if you guys pass this, we'll be really happy. Thank you
very much. Thanks for coming. We appreciate it. Okay, let's move on. Thank you very much, folks. We will get on with our business here. 20. We have House 3448, which we have Fred Avera here, Polk County District Attorney. Thanks. Pardon? We did 230. We did 3299
before
you. Oh no!
Oh, okay. I just looked at it.
Okay.
Thank you.
And then we have a work session, folks. We hope we can get finished as quickly as we can.
Thank you.
What am I missing?
Fred.
Oh, no. Madam Chairman, members of the committee, I've passed out some written testimony, and it's rather lengthy, so I'll try to be very brief in my oral testimony. I think we'd all agree that police officers should be engaged in activity involving fighting crime and detecting crime and chasing criminals. Prior to 1988, I think we would have all agreed that police officers should also be involved in helping people, searching for lost children, assisting disabled motorists, or checking on the welfare of sick and injured persons. In 1988, however, the Oregon Supreme Court decided the case of State versus Bridewell and made the declaration that that sort of community caretaking function is not something that police officers are authorized to do. The court said that they could be authorized to do that if the legislature or some other politically accountable body felt that they should do that, but absent that guidance, the court would not read that duty into the inherent functions of a police officer. There were three dissents to that opinion led by the Chief Justice, and his comment was that if in trouble, he'll learn not to turn to the police for assistance, he'd be better off calling AAA. Since Bridewell, a number of cases have been decided by the Court of Appeals and by circuit and district courts around the state. I have set out all of those cases that I could find that have reached the appellate courts and either received opinions or been affirmed without opinion, including the Bridewell case. Among the activities that the courts have decided that the police are not authorized to do are resolve family disputes, check on homes that appear to have been broken into, assist emergency medical technicians at the scene of an accident, search for missing children, check on the welfare of apparently ill or injured persons, set highway flares and divert traffic around dangerous traffic conditions, respond to a person's request for emergency help for a person who had stopped breathing, and assist firefighters in preventing an explosion. All those activities have been declared outside of a police officer's duty by either the Oregon Supreme Court or the Oregon Court of Appeals. Perhaps the absurdity of that result is best illustrated by two cases, State versus Martin and State versus Rhodes. In Martin, a police officer saw a person slumped over in a car, and the officer assumed that this person was ill or injured and went over to help that person. It turns out the person wasn't ill or injured. He was under the influence of alcohol and in possession of methamphetamine. The Court of Appeals ruled that since the officer's motive in going over to this person was to render assistance, and that since police officers have no statutory authority to do that, that that evidence would be suppressed. In State versus Rhodes, a different police officer was faced with nearly the identical set of facts. That police officer, however, in addition to wanting to help a possibly ill or injured person, in his mind thought, perhaps I have a drunk driver. And that officer went over, did the exact same thing that the officer in Martin did, and the Court of Appeals ruled that since one of the motives of the officer was to go beyond helping this person, but also to perhaps investigate a crime, and police officers have that authority, that that's something that that officer could do.
Is that why you've got sub three in here? And I have some questions about the right to enter upon a premise of another if it reasonably appears to be. And then once you enter, the seizure of evidence seems like it's a very broad authority to move here without a warrant.
I'm unclear which line you were referring
to. Well, I'm looking at sub 4 as it relates to A above under sub 2. If you hook those two together, it seems to me you've got a very broad ability there.
Paragraph 4 was added actually by the House Judiciary Committee, and it was their,
what is the prize?
Their response to, frankly, the bill we presented, we felt was overly broad. The paragraph 4 that was in there that was drafted by the ODAA, we felt was overly broad, and we told the House Judiciary Committee that. What their intent was in paragraph 4, that was actually Representative Mason's language, was to make it clear that any time that police officers supposedly act under a community caretaking function, that they are doing that without a warrant, and it would be the burden on the state to prove that they were acting properly. The language that came out is a little confusing when you first look at it, but that was the discussion in House Judiciary, and that was the intent of that amendment to the bill. Looking down the section, subsection 2, all that does essentially is to establish that subsection 1, that there is a community caretaking function. Subsection 2 defines that to be limited to but not include entering upon premises if it reasonably appears necessary to prevent harm, render aid, or locate missing persons, and then to stop or redirect traffic or aid motorists if it appears necessary to prevent serious harm, render aid, or locate missing persons. A lot of the language in there is in response to the particular cases. One of the cases I discuss in the written testimony involved a case in the Duffer area where there had been a serious fatal traffic accident blocking the highway. The police went back about a mile to divert traffic through Duffer and around the dangerous condition. And in the course of diverting traffic, a drunk driver kind of rolled through the flares and pulled up to the officer and wound up being arrested. And the court held that police officers have no authority to divert traffic around a dangerous condition, and that what they were doing was essentially beyond their authority.
Senator Springer has a question. I'm going to.
Well, bad facts make bad law, I guess. That's age-old axiom. I suppose if we need to target that particular situation in Duford, we could do so with a little bit more precision than a bill, which will allow, as the definition of community caretaking appears to do, when we say includes but is not limited to, includes but is not limited to, search reasonably not to locate missing persons. I mean, if you got a three-year-old who's missing, cops can go on everybody's property within a half mile. And look, that's reasonable if you're looking for a missing kid. And anything they turn up without a warrant, bingo. I'm sorry. Nobody is safe in their home from unreasonable search or seizure if that's the law in Oregon.
Madam Chairman, Senator Springer, all I'd say to that is prior to 1988, this bill is what we all assumed the law was. And the types of abuses you're talking about is something I worry about, too. But I'm not aware of those abuses taking place prior to 1988 when everybody figured that we could do that.
Okay, I think we need to look probably at, Ingrid's mentioned to look at the case, the page 240 of the opinion that it's written by Justice Carson, I think. So there is some further discussion that we can at least reflect upon as we think about the definition of caretaker, and I think that we need to clarify it and see what we can put together here probably, but what else, Fred?
That's about what I wanted to say, Madam Chairman. Thank you.
Okay. Further questions for committee members? We will look at this. We'll try to work with committee members who have concerns, work with Ingrid, see. Thanks. I want to thank Fred for bringing the other cases so that saves us some ability to have to go and do that original research. We'll get Ingrid to look at them and reflect and share with committee members some further discussions about that as we move ahead. So I would say, though, that we will be looking at trying to narrow this and keep it on target with the cases, certainly with the original concerns. Thanks. Thanks
very
much.
Maybe we can do to try to help you do that.
Great.
We want the bill, and if it needs to be narrowed, we're happy to do that.
Great. Thanks. Thanks very much. We appreciate it.
Willing to look at any effort in that direction, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Anyone else to speak to House Bill 3448? Thanks very much. House Bill 2586. I was going to say there's not a certain not a person here.
I guess I've never done this before.
Okay, come on up.
Good evening, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Rosanna Creighton, Executive Director of Citizens for a Drug-Free Oregon. And I guess I'm so pleased to be here with you tonight that I forgot to sign in. I apologize. House Bill 2586 is the first bill to come before this committee from the Citizens for a Drug-Free Oregon 1991 legislative package. Historically, Citizens for a Drug-Free Oregon has focused on law enforcement issues, but we recognize that ultimately the war on drugs will be won through prevention and treatment. House Bill 2586 is one of the two treatment bills requested by our organization. The purpose of this bill is to make the treatment of alcoholism and other drug dependency part of the sentencing order or conditions of probation. It is necessary to provide treatment for alcoholic and chemically dependent offenders to break the strong link between chemical dependency and criminal behavior. Our criminal justice system is so overtaxed, our courts are overburdened, and many of the same individuals are being arrested and released and arrested again and on and on and on. Today, convicted criminals are given probation, are set loose on our streets and our neighborhoods. Currently, the counties and state corrections officers and parole and probation officers are asking for permission to have handguns on them because they do not feel safe. These officers say weapons are necessary because they must deal with increasingly violent, and they say very often, drug-fueled clientele. So House Bill 2586 really is written to address the obvious: drug-addicted criminals that are on our streets or will be soon set free to roam our streets. Now, I'm not going to go on with formal testimony. I have it for you. The bill has been amended, and we have added wording in Section 3, Line 19. The purpose of all of these amendments, of course, was so that we wouldn't stress the budget of corrections or the budget of the state, et cetera. In Section 3, Line 19, we intentionally put in the words, "to the extent that funds are available." That same wording has been added to Section 4. On page 3, lines 41 through 44, the wording, and we see it throughout the document, that the court may require instead of the court shall require, and also if public or private resources are available. That wording was added. House Judiciary was very concerned that there would be a condition of probation in a community where there weren't programs available, so that that person would not be able to fulfill a treatment requirement. Unless the committee has questions, I haven't had the opportunity to see a summary that came from Judiciary. I hope, Madam Chair, that it's there for you that explains it more. I don't want to take any more of your time.
Thank you. Are there questions for Rosanna? Thank you very much for coming. We appreciate it. Anyone else to speak to House Bill 2586? Okay, let's move on then to House Bill 2018. Do we have anyone who's signed up on House Bill 2018? This came to us, I think, from basically the Justice Department.
Not a ring of hand, but we have some ring.
Okay, let's. This has to do with assaults by more than one person. Elevates the offense, right, Ingrid? Let's kind of go through it briefly.
Yes, Madam Chair. Basically, it would elevate from a Class A misdemeanor to a Class C felony. An assault which resulted in physical injury to another person if it were caused by a defendant acting in concert with someone who was actually present with the defendant. Adds it to the assault 3 category rather than assault 4.
It seems a rather straightforward.
There is a fiscal impact statement, and it's indicated to be somewhere between $10,000 and $52,000 plus whatever corrections resources may be needed, and those are indefinite.
Okay, Madam Chair.
Senator Springer.
Ingrid, does this, remind me again how the courts define physical injury?
Senator Springer, among the materials which I guess we're not provided to you, but I have here is a definition of physical injury, and it basically means any impairment of physical condition or substantial pain.
Okay, so three guys get in a barroom fight, one guy helps somebody else hold somebody, and guy hits some of his fist and breaks his nose. Instead of a misdemeanor assault 4, we got a C felony.
By all or none or whom, I guess the question is, everyone involved, right? Ingrid, is that true?
On an aid and abet theory, yes. I believe all of the everyone involved in holding or otherwise encouraging the activity would be guilty of the same offense.
Okay.
Chair.
Yes, Senator Hill.
It says, I'm referring now to the testimony of Terry Ann Leggert. It says, the injuries suffered by the victims range from broken bones to concussions. That's in the second paragraph of her testimony. Wouldn't that come under the serious physical injury?
Ingrid?
Madam Chair, Senator Hill, probably not, and I'm sorry I can't be more definite than that. I don't believe there's case law on that particular point, but serious physical injury generally means, and it's set forth in subsection 7 of 161.015, a substantial risk of death or serious protected impairment, disfigurement, things of that nature.
We have a we've been trying to work with a Senate bill that the city of Portland had introduced that we just couldn't resolve, which had to do with broken bones. We couldn't get a definition of what it meant, and so we just couldn't get that one off the ground out of the staff offices here because we couldn't get a definition of the broken bone issue in terms of the opportunity to elevate it. So I think they're trying to look at things in different ways. it's here, folks. We'll take it up as time goes on. It's here to contemplate, cogitate about. Let's go ahead and move on. Yeah. Yeah, okay.
Kind of in stride with the House bills we're getting.
Okay, we'll be back to you on this one, see what we can, see if we can work anything out on that. That is the extent of, I think, the public hearing that we had scheduled today. Let's take up, I'll start down the list of work session. House Bill 3112. Good.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, this bill was last before the committee on the 13th of May. It basically would permit the court to designate a single agency to do both an evaluation and provide treatment for drug and alcohol programs for driving under the influence or diversion programs. The Assistant Director for Alcohol and Drug Abuse Programs would have to certify that there's no alternative in the service area or that a particular agency has been authorized as a demonstration project. I don't believe there's any fiscal impact estimated.
This has had to do with our collection with some dispute with the
3112.
Excuse me, thank you.
Marion County folks and Jeff Kushner and the courts to decide whether they could actually refer and treat at the same time. This issue has been worked out with them. There are no amendments. It's here. If folks want to take action.
Madam Chair, then, and I would just to find out anyway, I would move House Bill 3112 to the floor to do past recommendation.
Okay. Senator Hill has moved House Bill 3112 to the floor with a Dupress recommendation. Discussion. Call the roll, please.
Senator Brockman.
Aye.
Senator Hamby.
Aye.
Senator Shoemaker.
Aye.
Senator Springer.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hill.
Aye.
Chair Cohen.
Aye. Motion carried.
Clark Cathy.
We mean one poor clerk's going to survive this committee one way or another, right?
Still recovering from the methadone.
I'm sure, yes. Well, you haven't seen the last of that one yet. Okay, House Bill 2311, excuse me. This is a little banker's bill, requires agency to seize his property, take reasonable steps. Right, Ingrid?
That's correct, Madam Chair. It arises out of a case, State versus Emory, which Mr. Bronner described to the committee at the public hearing, which basically says that the state does not have to compensate owners of property for damages resulting from use of the item as evidence. This bill would basically require the agency to maintain that property against loss, damage, or deterioration, but would not make the agency liable for those kinds of things if they resulted from reasonable actions taken to secure evidence.
And we have, oh, these are House amendments. We have no amendments?
That's correct,
right?
Madam Chair.
Okay. Pleasure of the committee.
Well.
Again, Senator Shoemaker, I believe the language comes from Senate Bill 283 in the 1983 session, and I can't
which makes best sense? I mean, should any sort of government mail that comes from a person in his official
no,
capacity,
I think you don't want to open it so long.
So elected and appointed is appropriate.
Yeah. Okay. Anybody else? Janet, are you moving your Dash 1 amendment?
I will, Madam Chair.
I guess the question is what, well, okay.
Yeah.
Let's talk about what the committee, do we have what we want to do on the bill before we move the amendments?
Did the inmates have a public hearing on this, as a matter of fact, before?
I don't know.
I haven't seen those guys lately. Kind of hearing down at the joint.
This is the bill that allows
that
limits the.
We could save the state the legal expenses here, all the motions and et cetera, et cetera. It'd be worth it.
But this guy has a, this is the roll version of the same.
This is the one that, on the...
$5,000. They got rid of the ombudsman. Now they don't want to let him appear. So they just get their written stuff and they just do what they want to do.
So, you all, it's the pleasure of the committee on this, on the bill itself. You want to, I think we
gotten
have...
Stuff.
Gotten stuff. I'm for gotten stuff tonight.
What happened in 83 to these amendments? Did they die in the House?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, actually, in the testimony you have from the 83 session, what happened was the department agreed to adopt rules in accordance with the bill. And they did for a while.
That's
and in the
right.
meantime, they
remember that
reverted.
You were on judiciary along
yes,
with us there,
yes.
Jeanette. They went back on their word.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Madam
okay.
Chair, I'll move
Senator.
To get in step. Tell me what
Senator.
With the dash one.
That's a non-debatable motion, isn't it?
Senator Hanby has moved to replace the substance of a House Bill 2198 with the dash one amendment. As we have modified in the chair's discussion and further whatever modification it takes to amend to make sure that we actually take out the body of the bill and replace it with the dash one amendment. The objection to Senator Hanby's motion, hearing none, so ordered. Okay. Okay, Senator?
Move the bill.
Senator Hanby moves House Bill 2198 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Further discussion? Call the roll, please.
Senator Brockman.
Aye.
Senator Hanby.
Aye.
Senator Shoemaker.
Aye.
Senator Springer.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hill.
Aye.
Chair Cohen.
Aye. Motion carried.
Jeff, thank you. After you slam the gavel closed, I must share with the committee another little item I just learned about. Are we done?
We are done, unless you want to pass out the unlawfully obtaining a dog and cat, or unless you want to pass out the House Bill 2586, which is the drug dependency.
We already do them.
Those are the two that are here.
We'll leave
them over till the next time. Thank you. Senator Hanby has something to share with us.
Yeah.
You are adjourned.
Yes. Yeah.